Blog Talk Radio.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, after a very exciting day of boxing, welcome to the Post Fight Show. We have some very strong opinions from my co-host, Bill Thomas and Nick Payne. So first I'm going to start it off with Nick. Let me know what you thought of the Cotto fight, and then after that I'm going to let Bill jump right into the NBC card early because I know he doesn't even want to talk about the Cotto fight. So go ahead, Nick.
All right, what's going on, Corey? So, I want to say, first of all, my hat's off to Cotto. The guy, even though I figured he was going to come in and do what he did, you know, he put on a good performance. Now, I think, again, you know, it wasn't really against a real high-quality opponent, but, you know, hey, you know, it is what it is, and he did really well against Daniel Gill. I thought Gill might give him a little bit more problems in the beginning, but he was able to go in there and take care of business right away for the most part. And I don't know how much credit I want to give Freddie Roach. I will give him a little credit for this one just based on, you know, Cotto looking like the old Cotto in this fight. He had good foot movement. His head movement was good. You know, he was punching really well. And he was able to box and move and also go on the attack when he needed to. So all in all, his performance was good. But I don't know how much of that was Freddie Roach necessarily. I mean, I don't know. I'm thinking he looked about the same to me as he did when he fought, I think, Margarito for the second time. You know, he still had the same movement than around the head movement, and he was throwing good punches at that time too. So I don't know. But I'll give him credit for the win. It was a good fight. He put on a good performance. And now it's on to bigger and better things, hopefully. But Daniel Gill, I got to say, though, before I let this go, Daniel Gill, with all respect to him, I think the man needs some new trainers. He couldn't even display to me a decent jab tonight. And again, he went out there and got whooped on, just like he did with Triple G, and he had to call it quits. And I just don't think that he had proper training on how to punch properly. Even though he's not a strong puncher, it could be due to the way that his trainers taught him how to punch. And I'm just going to say that he could have done better with a great jab if he knew how to throw a proper jab. I think he could have gave Cotto a little bit of problems more than what he did.
All right, Bill, it's on you.
Well, a lot of factors here. And like you were saying, Nick, about not giving Freddie Roach credit, I have to give him credit in this sense, as far as being a spiritual guru for Cotto and as far as guiding his career. Because I know what Freddie's doing more than anything, and that's advising him on who and who not to fight and when to fight him. Mm-hmm. You know, that's Freddie's role right now. It's not so much anything he's doing as far as training camp or anything else, other than being just an advisor to him to tell him, look, right, I think you need to stay away from this guy. Or, yeah, it looks like this guy's easy pickings, which Gill was, somebody he could look good on. And it's the business end of it again at work. And that was just to make Cotto look good to sell the Alvarez fight. Mm-hmm. And Gill was put in that position to do just what he did, make Cotto look good. And he did his job to the utmost, I got to say. He really did.
Yeah. Hey, you know, let me throw this in there right quick, guys. I didn't hear it directly from Freddie Roach because I couldn't really listen to the corner speaking, but the commentator mentioned that, I think he mentioned that Freddie Roach had said that he was encouraging Cotto to go out there and be more, you know, stay in his ground more and not move around so much and go out there and, you know, put his punches together. Now, that if that was true and that's what was said by Freddie Roach, then I will give him credit for that because that's exactly what I was thinking. You know, I think Cotto, even though he's good at his movement, I mean, it looked great and it's beautiful, but sometimes I think it's unnecessary because, you know, and when he goes back to the corner, you can see he was breathing hard, he was breathing heavy, and one thing my coach used to tell me all the time is like, why move around unnecessarily? You don't have to do all of that. If the guy's not really a threat to you, why are you moving around so much? You know, it's wasted energy. And I thought to myself, that's how I felt with Cotto. Like, and I agree, if Freddie Roach said that, then I give him credit for saying that. I think Cotto, as beautiful as it was, he should have, you know, maybe stood his ground a little more and fought Gill, and he probably would have took him out a lot earlier than he did. And, in fact, I actually wanted him to do that against Margarito. When he fought Margarito, he moved around beautifully, but I feel that he was faster with his punches and he had more power. I feel that if he had just stood there and basically in the pocket and started whooping on Margarito and didn't run away so much, I think he would have done what Shane Mosley did to Margarito, to be honest with you. Because Mosley put them punches together. He didn't run around like Cotto did. He went in there and he threw them hard shots. He was faster. He had power. And, man, eventually he put old Margarito out. And that's what I would have advised to Cotto in both of his fights with Margarito. I was like, go get this guy. So,
he was, a victim of the plaster of Paris in the first fight.
True. I will
say that. In the back of his mind in the second fight.
Yeah.
You know what I mean, Nick?
Yeah. I mean, I do believe he was traumatized on that.
Exactly.
However, the only thing I didn't like, I mean, and I'm not saying that stuff wouldn't do some fire, some damage, but I kind of question it just a little bit, because even if Margarito was using that stuff, I want to know how much difference it would have made had he not used it, because Cotto was still hitting that man with everything he had, and he was still kept coming. He wasn't hurting him, you know. I mean, he couldn't do anything. And then Margarito was landing those shots all night long like crazy. Eventually, when he caught up to him, so I mean, I don't know.
What I was going to say to that, Nick, and I've got an answer for that, and how I explain that to everybody with the plaster of Paris is how it works. It's like you yourself hitting a guy with everything you got. And him hitting you back with brass knuckles on, eventually, who do you think is going to wear down first?
Right. I got you.
You see what I'm saying?
Right.
And basically, that principle. He was. He didn't have a plan. He didn't have an even playing field that night. I'll give him that much. I'll give him that leg to stand on.
Yeah. And I hate to say this, guys. I got to throw this out there. I would like to feel some of that stuff. You know what I mean? I'd like to get a hold of some of it. Because I've never actually, you know, you hear about it a lot. Even in the old days, they say Jack Dempsey used it in one of his early fights, one of the big guys. But I always kind of wondered, like, I mean, I'd like to, you know, just to kind of check it out to see exactly how much difference that sucker makes, you know, because they talk about it being really hard and thick. But, I mean, I don't know. I'm just saying it interests me because I've never actually seen it. I just hear about it. So, I was just curious.
It creates a cast in your glove, basically. And I tell you, another guy that used to use it basically his whole career and just got away with it was that Prince Nassim Hamed. And I always knew it. I used to tell anybody that would listen when he was fighting, I said, this boy's got a cast in his glove. That's how I used to say it. I could tell because he didn't even punch with proper foot placement or leverage or anything, and he was knocking guys out like he was hitting them with a baseball bat. I knew something was shaky about that, and when Barrera fought him, they made him rewrap his hands, and that night, you know, like he couldn't have broke a potato chip with a punch.
Yeah. Okay, I didn't even know that. Okay.
Yeah. That's why he got out of the game.
Sorry, Corey. We got off subject there, man.
Oh, no, I'm enjoying it. I'm letting y'all go at it. I like it. I'm loving it. I'm just listening. So while you talking, Bill, you can go ahead and go into the NBC card right now.
Well, I tell you what, Guerrero got the shock of his life today. That was supposed to be what we saw with the Daniel Gill fight, a clear-cut blowout, tune-up, showcase fight. And it was everything but that. That guy,
Martinez.
Martinez gave Guerrero all he could handle and some. And personally, I thought he won the fight. I think he got robbed. I wasn't even really in agreement with a draw. I mean, like everybody was saying, it could have been a draw if they wanted to be fair. And I know that's true. But, I mean, if a guy wins, give him the win. You know what I mean? Stop doing that to these guys' careers.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, Nick, it's on you. You said you said you caught up on it, so I want to hear your opinion.
Yeah. I'll tell you what. Just to speak a little on Guerrero, I've always enjoyed watching Guerrero fight for the most part. He seemed to always be in these so-called, you know, candidates for fight of the year with most of his fights. And he's always been, to me, a very savvy boxer. He has good boxing skills, and he always seems to find some way to win, you know, dig down deep and really grit it out and pull out these wins, man. And he's so he's fun to watch. I like the guy. But I was talking to Bill earlier tonight, and I was telling him, you know, he just seems like he just can't ever make it to the big time. You know, he was never a pay-per-view star, never did that, except with Floyd Mayweather, who was his only really big, you know, major fight that he ever did, and that didn't work out too well. But all in all, I like Guerrero. I will say this, though. In that fight, I expected him to do a lot better. Martinez, my hat's off to him, because I expected him to do a lot worse from what I had seen him fight previously. But one thing I want to point out is the defense tactics of Robert Guerrero. Now, it's not just him, but because I saw it specifically with him tonight, I'm gonna point him out. But with most of these fighters, man, they seem like they don't know how to block an uppercut to the body or to the body or the head. A lot of these guys don't know how to block an uppercut at all, and I see it too many times that usually when a fighter throws the uppercut, the other guy's just wide open and eats it unless he gets out of that situation. So I want to specifically talk about Robert Guerrero. I didn't see him attempt even to block an uppercut properly. And if I can, I'm going to try to describe this how people are taught normally and how it probably should have been.
Let me do it, Nick. Since you're the trainer, let the novice do it.
All right.
And what you want to do is cuff your hand under your chin and catch it.
I got to add to that, Bill.
Okay, what would you do, Nick?
That's the most commonly taught way to do it. And I've seen even good trainers teach fighters how to do it. I used to teach people to do that. But what I've realized is that sometimes those shots come with a lot of velocity.
Yeah, they do.
You know, especially when they pull them back. And it's hard sometimes to even – I mean, if you try to do that, like my coach described it, if you try to do that with George Foreman when he was sparring him, he said he would have knocked his head off. It wouldn't have mattered. Yeah. You had to get out of there. And he said George would lift you off the ground every time he hit you, even when you blocked it. So his method of blocking that he gave into me, you know, it was to – I see if I can describe this now. It's kind of like a stiff arm, almost at a 90-degree angle. What you're doing is you're taking the blade of your forearm and you're chopping it into these guys, their tender side of their forearm, because their palms are up normally. And they're rearing back to throw this shot. So he said, as soon as you see this shot coming, you should be able to see it a mile away, unless they're throwing really short, compact shots like you're supposed to throw. But when they wing it back, you've got to meet them halfway and stuff it with that forearm. And what ends up happening is two things. Number one, you stop the shot. Number two is you hit them with that blade of your arm, that bone, and it goes and digs right into that tender spot. And, man, I tell you right now, I used to get it done to me during practice when we were helping other fighters. And it hurt like hell, guys. I mean, it made me not want to throw it anymore.
Okay.
It was beautiful. One day I'd like to be able to, you know, maybe do a demonstration of it or something, because I'd never see anybody else do it. And I tell you right now, my coaches always tell me, he said, man, he said, don't ever let nobody hit you with an uppercut when they're rearing it back like that. He goes, and he would go nuts if I ever let it get through. And he'd say, nobody should ever be able to hit you with an uppercut like that. You should be gone or you should be stopping it with that forearm and making them not want to throw it anymore. And
Wilfred,
I just want to point that out.
Wilfred Benitez used to ride it, though. He used to actually, like, slip a uppercut. I've never seen really too many people do that. He wouldn't even let you touch him with it. He would just do it with head movement.
And see, that's funny, too, because that's the thing. Like, you can see those things coming. Once I really started zeroing in on it, nobody ever, when I was doing sparring, because unfortunately I was never able to do it, you know, on professional, actually compete. But when I was training as a professional – and the spar in the gym, these guys weren't hitting me with no uppercuts. That's for damn sure. They never could. One might sneak one in once in a while, but for the most part, I was able to stuff every one of them and stop them, and it was making them not want to throw it anymore. But I think that's what the problem is. Like I said, people don't know how to even defend. Not just that, but hell, fighters nowadays can't even block against a proper, just a jab, you know?
Yeah.
They're eating all these punches unnecessarily. and it's ridiculous. So I just want to point that out. I feel like he should have never got hit with four or five or six uppercuts in a row that put him down. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, one maybe, but don't let a series of them suckers get through. I mean, get out of there or put, you know, block it the way you should have been taught to block it.
Yeah, uppercut is a wonderful punch, though, when landed thrown properly.
Oh, definitely. I'll tell you right now, just to give you a little information, too, how when I was taught to do it. When we did uppercuts, you know, the old school, my way my coach would teach me, he'd say, you don't rear back, okay, because if you fought somebody like George who knew how to stop it, he said he'd stuff it and it'd hurt you. So what he would do is you use the uppercut to – you keep it nice and high and tight around your face, and what you do is it's really used to lift the head up of the opponent, and then you come over the top with a right hand or a left hook. And that's how we did it. So it's a short, choppy movement, and it was enough to get those guys' head to bounce up, and then I'd come over the top with something, either a left hook or a right hand in my case. And that always seemed to work. And I used to tell my coach, I said, I can't generate as much power with that. I like to rear back. And he's like, yeah, but you know what, though? It's almost unstoppable when you do it that way, when you do it short and choppy, and it gets that head up, man. And I wish I could show you guys, man. It's a beautiful thing. But I use it all the time when I was doing it.
What you're saying. I can visualize what you're saying, actually.
So.
Wow. That's great.
So let me ask you this, Nick. So are what you're saying is, because I'm just going to bring it to the front. So are you saying in so many words that maybe Robert Guerrero needs to change trainers?
Now, I do believe that at some point when you keep making the same mistakes over and over and when nothing's really changing for you, it may be something that you're doing that you need to change. And if your trainer is, you know, going through the same motions with you over and over again and you notice that you keep making these same mistakes, then maybe you got to look at that, you know. And don't get me wrong, I don't, you know, some people used to criticize Oscar De La Hoya for constantly changing trainers all the time. And maybe he shouldn't have changed them so often. But now that I think about it, all these years later, you know, in the position that I am, I'm thinking to myself, well, maybe it was a good idea. Maybe he felt he needed to do that because he wasn't learning, you know, how to be – he wasn't improving, maybe. Maybe that's how he felt. And that's kind of what I see with some of these fighters. Like Guerrero, he's been with his dad for several years. And I know a lot of them say, hey, I don't want to leave my guy because I've been with him all this time. That may be true, and you don't have to leave him completely, you know, like shut him out. But at the same time, this is a business. This is your money. This is your health you're playing with, you know, and to me, you want to do better. You don't want to stay stuck in the same position and hope to do better the next time around. I think after a while, you need to take a look at, hey, I think I want to bring somebody else in to kind of maybe see if I'm doing something wrong or you know, to help fix this. And sometimes it makes a difference, as we saw with, Chris Algieri. That made a huge, tremendous difference. I said, God, dog, you already know the guy can stick and move really well, but now that he knows how to come forward, you know, he may have opened up a whole new world to himself, and now he may be, you know, end up. Who knows what he can do with his career now that he knows how to be aggressive and quit wasting his time dancing around the ring all the time. You know what I mean? So save that for when he needs to dance around the ring, but he didn't need to against Khan. He did a pretty he did a hell of a job, I think. I think he just should have cut the ring off just a little bit more, and I think he did great in that fight, to be honest with you. So
that's true.
I'm just want to put that out there with Guerrero. Like I said, I know he loves his dad, and his dad obviously brought him a long way. But like I said, you're not kicking anybody out of camp. You're just saying, like I said, you just need to kind of say, hey, look. You know, let's see if we can make a change and make some improvements by bringing somebody else in. Because that's the thing about boxing I've learned too, guys, is that it's a really, you know, every coach thinks they know better. Okay, every coach, you know, it's like an offensive thing when you tell them, oh, well, I'm going to go to this guy because he's, you know, I think he's a better teacher. Like, they get offended. Nobody likes to bring anybody from the outside. They hate it. And I know that every coach is real proud of themselves. Like, no, I'm teaching you the right way. We don't need this person. You know what I mean? So... But, you know, and I understand that, but at the same time, if you got somebody that can help your fighter be a better fighter, then, you know, maybe that's what's best, and you need to at least consider it. You know, hear the person out. So.
That's true. Now, spoke of De La Hoya changing trainers a lot, but I've seen, like you said, a lot of fighters do it. But usually when they do it, Nick and Corey,
is when a guy suffers a loss. That's when they want to jump ship. Because a lot of fighters want to blame everybody but themselves.
Yeah.
They'll go with the closest person to him, which is usually the trainer. They'll fire him. And, you know, but that's after a loss, usually. You don't see anybody changing trainers after wins.
Yeah, yeah. And then some of them, hell, I'll tell you right now, Bill, I think some of them, even when they win, they came out all beat up. You know what I mean? And that win should have been easier. And so I think they shouldn't even judge it just on, I won my last few fights. It's like, yeah, but your last few fights, you look like crap. And, and you got your head knocked around, and you looked worse off than you did the guy you beat. You know what I mean? And that just goes to show, going back to James Kirkland, it's the same kind of thing. You know, he's over there mauling these guys around in the beginning, but some of his good wins, man, that were exciting, hell, he was getting his head rung all over the place for no reason. So,
well, he's classic example of the point.
Yep. So, you know, like I said, hey, man, I just think, like I said, it's not about firing somebody and saying, man, you suck, I'm getting rid of you. It's more about, hey, listen, coach, you've brought me this far, and I'm appreciative of that, but I would like to talk to you about maybe calling in somebody else to get a second opinion about something, maybe teach us something that we didn't know, you know, that can make us better, a better team. It's about helping the whole team, you know what I mean? Not about who's better and firing so-and-so, you know what I mean? But that's what I wouldn't be offended. I wouldn't be offended. I would say if what I showed you isn't working, you don't feel comfortable, if it's not making sense, then why would I expect you to keep me then?
Yeah.
You know, I want to hear this other guy and see what he's got. And then if it makes sense to us, then that's great. Then we did a good thing because it makes sense. But my coach always told me, if it doesn't make sense, it's probably not right. But everything he's ever showed me, he always told me, he said, does that make sense to you? Doesn't that make a hell of a lot of sense, what I showed you? I said, yeah, you know what? It makes all the sense in the world. And that's why I stuck with him. And I've been around to different gyms. And that's – Brent Bowers is the best coach I've ever been with. And everything he showed me, it makes sense. So that's why I stay with them. And that's where I'm getting my teachings from, and I'm passing that down to everybody else.
That's right.
Speaking of those type of fighters, Bill, those type of fighters you were just talking about, perfect example of that would be Julio Cesar Chavez Jr., who fired the trainer every fight. He just fought the last one after the Funfar fight, when it's really himself and his work ethic.
That's true. Yeah, because it's a knock. I've always heard that he's lazy in the gym. I heard he's kind of lazy. So.
Yeah, Freddie Roach is complaining about that, I believe.
Yeah, that's why Freddie Roach got rid of him, because for a while he tried to work with Freddie Roach. And then Freddie Roach said, I'm not working with you. You ain't worth my energy and time.
And you know what, guys? Let's go ahead and switch it around. And also, for some of these people that believe, he did terrible in this fight, you got to get rid of that trainer. He must have been the trainer. Sometimes I think also that it's the fighter just not wanting to listen. He's not doing what he was told.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a perfect example. We used to train a guy that he was 0-4. Never won a fight. He came to us. The guy that he was going up against, we had already, we had already trained this guy. We knew exactly what he was capable of and what he was going to do. We kept going over and over it with him. The guy was doing great in the gym. But when it came time to fight night, he just froze up like a deer in headlights, man. And this guy went out there and did exactly what we said he was going to do. First round, first minute of the first round, I'd say maybe the first 15 seconds. Knocked him smooth out. I didn't even get a chance to sit down before they called it off. So, it was ridiculous.
Wow.
And I'll tell you right now, it looked bad on us, but what I wanted people to realize is that, man, he didn't do anything that we went over. And we drilled and drilled and drilled. So I think just to let people know, sometimes, man, these guys are excellent in the gym, and he did great. He was whooping everybody in the gym. And then when we get to the showtime, and this is the second fight we've helped him with. Second time, both times he froze up. He just can't perform under the lights. He's now 0-5 twice with us, and over something ridiculous that we don't understand why he did that. So, like I said, I think sometimes it's not just the trainer, but we got to look at the fighter mentality also.
That's true. Yeah.
So,
and you said he sounds like he had incorrectable habits, man.
Yeah, something. I'm telling you, Bill, it was something. And the crazy part, the man, they were going to do a show about him. He was going to get involved in a show had he won this fight. And he had never won a boxing match, but he wouldn't quit. And I love that about him, that he never wanted to quit. But he was 45 years old. He was an old guy. But he had lost. He used to weigh like 300-something pounds. He got himself down to 230. and yeah. he fell in love with the sport and decided to become a fighter. And he was yeah. good in the gym, but he just could yeah. not perform come fight time. So,
wow.
But that would have been a great story, man. It would have been a great story for an older gentleman who was whooping all these youngsters in the gym, and he couldn't perform, though.
So he was the type of guy that had, like, superpowers. He could turn invisible as long as you weren't looking at him.
Right.
He was that kind of guy.
There you go. There you go. It was a real shame. We were very disappointed because he had all the athletic ability in the world, man, and a great story behind him. But it just wasn't enough. Sometimes that's why I tell people too. This isn't just about being good at fighting because you can look great in the gym, but you know when the lights turn on and everybody's watching you, and it's time to put on the show, you know that's when you gotta that's really the test right there because shit, if you can't put on yeah. perform on the stage, then you ain't worth the shit no matter what you do in the gym.
Exactly.
Oh.
Unbelievable.
Yep.
Wow.
Well, now that we're talking about that, I'm just going to get to the part today about my man Victor Artinian today.
What happened with that?
Oh, my goodness. Poor Victor.
I had to throw it in there because I knew Bill was going to freak out. So I have to give my hats off to my man Victor Artinian for giving me a competitive fight today and knocking Jesus Cellular's head off a couple of times in the first round, in the second round, and being Vic the man that I know he is, and then also beating Sugar Ray Leonard in the ping pong contest. But now that I've got my rocks off, I'll go ahead and let Bill comment on that fight.
Well, you know, I told you what was going to happen before it happened. I expected that. D'Artagnan is another guy to me who's just not fundamentally sound. He's a tough guy. He's rugged, but he's a free swinger. He doesn't have form. But what makes him effective in the game is he's so unorthodox and so just anything but textbook. That's what makes him hard to fight. But that's a pro and a con because he makes so many mistakes. He leaves himself wide open when he throws punches. And he's not really – he showed a little defensive skill today with his legs. He was getting out of trouble with his legs at times, and he was moving his head at times. But he's still going to make a mistake, and all you got to do is sit and wait for him to make that mistake if you're his opponent because you know it's coming. Mm-hmm. And that's what that guy basically did.
I don't know about that mistake, Bill. He had you shaking in your boots in the first, second round.
Not at all. Not at all. I told you he was going to get knocked out early. He lasted a little longer than I expected him to. And I said that before the fight started. I said I said he's going out early, but he didn't. He lasted longer than I expected him to. Victor Artinian can't fight, man.
You know what? And I got to say, guys, I feel bad about this now because I missed that fight. How the hell did y'all see that? I was looking for that. I didn't see nothing.
That was on NBC Sports. That came on when the broadcast ended on NBC. You had to turn to NBC Sports.
Oh, man.
That's the case with those day cards.
Okay.
And then you turn to NBC Sports right after.
And damn, okay. Because all I saw was that Brazil guy fight, and then I saw the Guerrero right after that. Okay.
But see, the beauty in that is they still run these things, and then it'll be on demand soon and all. So you'll still be able to catch it.
Right. Okay.
You know what I mean?
Did anybody see the Angulo fight? If you don't mind me asking.
Bill.
God.
So go ahead and tell them what happened, Bill.
Yeah, man. This look. Man, really.
Give it to me straight, baby.
You know I am. You
go
know
ahead.
I am. I'm just trying to like give you a good scenario to bring it home for you, man. But
okay,
that was a clear and simple case of one of them wouldn't fight and the other one couldn't fight. That's all I can say.
God, no, man. Good old Bill.
I'm serious. I mean, Angulo, he looked like Angulo, but the problem was he didn't have anything in front of him. This guy was a big bag of nothing.
Mm-hmm. You know, I've done my research on this guy, man. I looked that guy up, and I watched him a couple of fights on YouTube, and he looked terrible. So I was thinking he's a little slow, and he got knocked out a couple of times. I figured
he'd be, you know, Angulo might land a good shot on, but apparently that didn't happen, did it?
Yeah, it did.
Oh, he did? Okay, okay.
Oh, that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. I mean, you know, it was to be expected, but I'm saying it didn't really say anything for Angulo.
Yeah. So it was a knockout then?
Yeah, yeah, he stopped the guy.
What round was that?
I don't even remember the round because one round, every round looked the same. So I kind of lost count after a while. You know?
Good
Do you
enough.
Remember
good
before?
Enough.
It was. I know he knocked him down in like the fourth or the fifth round. I know he knocked him down. Then it was like that quick punch. He caught him in the fourth or the fifth round, but I can't remember how it ended. I know it was only a 10-round fight, but I know he caught him at the end of the fourth or the fifth round, and then the guy got up and came back and fought harder. So it had to be after the fifth round.
Yeah,
man. Oh, well, we done with Angulo anyway, man. I was just curious, that's all. But we all knew he's out of there, man.
It doesn't seem to matter
whatever he does, he doesn't seem to get any better.
Exactly.
Even when he was winning, man, I mean, you could tell he was slow, you know, and even with that power punch, I mean, hell, you can't even catch it.
Nick, I'm glad you said that. That's what I meant. I forgot about that. Honestly, this is no lie, man. When I was looking at it, I was saying to myself, now it was actually, I said, this is the slowest fight I've ever seen in my life. You know how they show, at the end of the round, they'll show the slow motion replay? It looked just like it did when it was actually speed. I was like, oh my God.
I knew, I figured, because when I did that research on that guy, man, I noticed he was really slow too. And I was like, man, so that might even the playing field with Angulo. I said, but you're definitely right. Even when Angulo was first coming up, I used to watch him. I said, dog, he was knocking people out, but he was slow as hell. Like, I mean, I don't see how you even got hit with those shots.
That's what I'm saying. But, I mean, both of them were slow. Both of them were. I mean, if that was like a scene on the news, it would have been a low-speed chase for sure.
Okay. and you know what? And let me just say this. I think somebody like Angulo, I mean, when you're that slow, you know, and you've been with these different trainers, I'm sure somebody showed him how to move his head or something along the line.
The fact that he's not doing it,
I can't believe that not, you know, that somebody hadn't shown him that. So I'm thinking, I think he's just one of those fighters, man, that you won't change. Like he's just, he is who he is. And no matter how much even if they taught him properly, I think he's so slow that even if he did stuff correctly, you know, these guys are too fast. Once he gets up to the elite like he's been doing, these guys are just too quick reaction. It's all, and a lot of times it has to do with the fighters, how they react too. If they're quick at reacting and seeing your body language when you move, I mean, they'll be gone before he throws anything.
Exactly. I mean, I'm quite sure they had to scour the earth to find this perfect opponent for him today.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, really.
Who was he with, guys? Who was his trainer? Do y'all remember who it might have been?
No. It was some unknown guy. It wasn't a well-known trainer. Because the last time I remember, he had Andre Ward's trainer.
Virgil Hunter.
Virgil
Hunter. Okay.
Yeah, it wasn't him.
Yeah, he left Virgil Hunter a while ago. He said that he wanted to go back to training the old school way that he wanted to train. So he got rid of Virgil. He got rid of Virgil Hunter, which I didn't think they were a good combination.
Hell, he got rid of Nacho Beristain, that other trainer that trained Marquez. And that's a good trainer, man, as far as I'm concerned. He seemed like he always had some good world champions, and he seemed like he knew his shit about boxing. So, I mean, the fact that he left him, I mean, to me that shows something about Angulo that maybe he's just he's not right. You know what I mean? That's a good trainer, man.
No. Yeah, he is. He definitely is. Angulo made mention of it. He said this guy was an old trainer he had years ago. He went back to him. But he was like somebody I wasn't familiar with by face. But
why'd you leave him in the first place? You know, that's what I want to know.
How about that? You know what I'm saying?
If he's that good at you for you, why the hell did you leave him? That's what I want to know.
That's true.
Well, it didn't make sense to me because Angulo looked slow. I looked like I could have went out there and knocked Angulo out as slow as his punches were.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah.
So I don't think it matters if you taught him correctly. He would maybe do a little better, but he's just too slow, and I don't even know how you would correct that. I mean, he might remember before Virgil Hunter was trying to make him do all that track running stuff and running him through hurdles and trying to speed his legs up, and he still looked like shit when he went out to that fight. It didn't do a damn thing for him.
No, not at all.
And I say, like I said, sometimes people, I say this. Sometimes this is just not, you know, that's just who you are. Your genetics are, that's, you know, and because, I mean, damn, I was thinking maybe he was going to get a little faster, his footwork a little better. It was nothing. And slow as he is, I think he's just one of those guys who has to accept that maybe this sport isn't for him anymore because he's just too slow, man. Too slow.
Well, I mean, look at Angulo. He doesn't even look like modern man. He looks like Cro-Magnon man or something anyway. He really does. You know.
Yeah.
Well, what I'm going to say is I'm going to reiterate that the best fight of the day was Vic the Man Darchinian bringing it to Jesus Cellular. That's all I got to say, man.
I got to check that out.
I like the card in general. That card was good. I was highly disappointed in in the Cotto fight in the sense that I was hoping Gale would at least win a round. I mean, give it some excitement. I mean, that was just, come on, man.
Yeah, and you know what, Bill, I think you'd agree. I think Cotto was wide open for a jab. If Gale had at least a good jab, he could have stuffed it on that forehead of his, the way Cotto sticks his leans over his left foot.
Yep.
I'm thinking, man, Gil could have, if he had a great jab like some of these fighters in the old days, man, I'll tell you right now, when I used to do it, I would knock dudes' heads back with that jab. You know, I didn't touch him or flick it or nothing. I treated it like a power punch, and I'd knock some dudes across the ring clearly with a jab, and they thought the jab was ridiculous. So what they would do was, hell, I'd win the fight with just a jab because they were scared to know what my power punches felt like. And I just wish these guys today would just learn how to throw a proper jab and stop flicking that damn crap. You know, I mean, I wish I would fight a guy like that. I'd love to fight a guy who just flicked at me. That's perfect. You know?
You know what really did that guy and what's his name, Gale, for me? When the fight first started, and I told my son, we were watching it together, and I told him I didn't like the way Gale started out because he was fighting from too – he was giving Cotto too much distance. He was fighting from too far away. And Cotto's the type of fighter, you have to crowd him. You have to be in his chest. Like the guy earlier, Martinez did. Martinez did with Guerrero. That's why he was so effective, because he was in Martinez's chest. That's a technique that's just forgotten today. You have to have an inside game. And a lot of these guys, he was giving Cotto so many escape routes by fighting so far away from him that it didn't even make sense.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe a little too much, you know. Like I said, I feel like these guys sometimes are just afraid of each other too. So it's like, come on, man.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
You're gonna get whooped anyway. You might as well go down. You know, trying to fight then if you're gonna get hit. Because I mean, hell. And what killed me, Bill? He kept getting hit with the left hook all night.
Yeah.
Like, don't you prepare for that? Don't you know he's gonna come with the left hook? And how the hell do you let that hit you every single time? Every time.
Yeah, but I mean. He was halfway across the ring from him, so, I mean, he had just the comfortability. He was just so comfortable in everything he was doing. He never put any pressure on Cotto at any point in that fight. All he did was following him. He followed him around the ring. He never cut the ring off once. Nothing.
Nope.
He just didn't have a clue.
Nope, and then he quit, you know, in the middle of that fight. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, that's it for his career. I mean, he's going to be a B.
I can't say that. Yeah, you're
a B guy now.
On a major network. No, that's over.
Nope. He's just one of those guys, sacrificial lambs to feed everybody now when they're coming up. To me, that looked bad. I mean, don't get me wrong. If the guy's hurt, I mean, that sucks. But that's the second fight that they had to call off because he just couldn't handle it. So he can't even finish the rounds. That's no good, man.
Exactly. Well, if you see him at all, the next time you see him, it may be on ESPN at best.
Right.
Hey, Victor Man, going against Victor Man Darchinian.
I have no problem with that. I like that play too, Corey. I'm not going to say anything bad about him. I mean, you know, he was in there. But I do think he needs to start looking at retirement, too.
Oh, yeah, he definitely needs to do that. But he caught him with some punches, you know, like me and you talked earlier. If you could combine his smart with some people's skill, it would be amazing.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Yeah, he's got all the heart in the world. He just his skill set doesn't match up with his heart. That's
right.
Right.
Exactly.
You know who I'm excited about, guys? I'm going to throw it in there, man. Nicholas Walters.
I haven't
seen him since he beat Donaire, I think, if I'm correct. I don't know if he fought again after that.
About a year ago.
But that was something that got me excited, man. I'm like, dude, this guy can fight, man. He's coming in and he's bringing it. And he looked like he had some decent skills that he could be somebody in this sport. So I just want to throw that out there. I'm excited to see Nicholas Walters come back and see what he can do.
Who was the opponent, though?
I don't know who was the opponent. I just heard that he was coming back to fight somebody. I don't know.
Yeah, he fights next weekend.
Yeah, his opponent is somebody who's ranked, so it'll be a good one.
Okay. That's cool. And because I hear Donaire's coming back, too, and I'm wondering about, you know, what is he going to do any differently?
That's true.
You know, because he's been looking, you know, it just ain't been the same, man. And I'm just kind of, you know, you kind of, after a certain amount of time, you look at a fighter and you're like, man, I don't want to remember you like this. I want to remember you when you were on top, man, and you were knocking dudes out. You know, I'd rather sometimes not see them keep going. Like Evander Holyfield, I hated to see him keep coming back and doing these rinky-dink fights and then getting, you know, he needed to get his license revoked and all this stuff because he's just, you know, getting, you know, taking on these ridiculous fights, continuing his career and then looking like crap. And I'm thinking, you know, I don't remember you like that, man. You know, I mean, you did great things. So I kind of feel that way about Donaire. I don't know. Hopefully he puts on a good performance. Maybe he makes a, you know, a decent comeback. But, I mean, I'm kind of over that already. You know what I mean? Kind of like, I don't know.
The perfect fight for Donaire, Nick, and Bill will agree, is Donaire versus Jesus Cellular, because that's his chance to go ahead and get another title. But we got 3 minutes left, Nick, so I want you to go ahead and get the floor right now before it cuts you off again.
Let me say this one thing real quick, brothers, about what Nick was saying about Donaire. I'm going to make this real quick. But the problem is, and just remember I said it, and look at it from now on, what's Donaire is Garcia. He's with Robert Garcia. That's the wrong trainer for him. Donaire, he is primarily a boxer puncher. But Robert Garcia has him fighting more stationary. And that's the problem. He's getting away with what he does naturally.
Right. I can see
Hold
that.
Up, Bill. You meant to say Cellular. You meant to say Jesus Cellular for Robert Guerrero, not Donaire.
No, I'm saying that
the trainer, right?
Donaire in general. I'm talking about Garcia. I know what I said. I said Robert Garcia
is
the wrong trainer for him.
No. You said that he was Nonito Donaire's trainer. He's not Donaire's trainer. He's Cellular's trainer.
Well, you mean Quay.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Not Cellular. It's Quay.
Okay.
But no, he is. Robert Garcia does have Donaire. Who has Donaire?
He did have Donaire. He did.
That's
for a while.
What I'm saying. That's what I last saw.
No, Robert Garcia has Cellular now. He doesn't have Donaire.
I'm saying, but he had Donaire too the last time I saw him fight. And for years he had Donaire, but he changed the style.
Yeah,
that's what I was saying.
I don't think he had Donaire when Donaire lost to Walters, though.
I'm not sure. I don't remember really if he did or not. But everything
he brought his dad back in. You remember that? He brought his dad back in to help out.
Yeah.
So I think Robert was in the corner, but his father was helping out.
That's what it was. That's exactly what it was.
So, gentlemen, I know we're probably about to get cut off again. So before we do, I just want to say again, it's been great talking with y'all. I want to give a shout out to myself, 3KingsProBoxing.com. If anybody out there is interested in fighting, you want to get with a good trainer, somebody can teach you the fundamentals properly, check me out on my website, 3KingsProBoxing.com, and give me a holler. All my contact information is on there. Guys, you've been great. That's all I have to say for right now.
All right, yeah, now we'll go ahead and finish out because it's going to cut us off. So.
Okay. Well, it's been a pleasure as always, fellas.
All right, same to you, Bill.
So we'll see what happens next week when Bill will be excited to talk on the show about Tomato Can versus Deontay Wilder. I can't wait to hear this.
All right.
Yeah, it's still. Sounds good.
Awesome.
Have a good week, fellas.
All right, guys. All right. Appreciate it. Yeah, have a good one.